Now, Tom Chaplin has enjoyed worldwide success as the frontman of Keane, but behind the scenes, he was battling addictions to drink and drugs, and those addictions returned to haunt him as he attempted to launch his solo career. And as he's spoken about very openly, very nearly cost him his life.
But he's turned a corner, both emotionally and in his career. It's a journey that's inspired his long-awaited debut solo album. It's The Wave. It comes out next month. Delighted to say that he joins us now. Good afternoon, Tom.
Hello, guys.
How is it to finally have this debut solo album almost out?
Well, it's a relief, you know. it's something that has been a long-held dream. But actually, you know, all the time that I was in Keane, I had this fantastic songwriter alongside me.
Yeah.
And it was kind of easy for me to coast along singing his wonderful songs for all those years.
This is Tim Rice-Oxley.
Tim from Keane, yeah.
So obviously went on to write for like Gwen Stefani, Kylie as well.
Absolutely. So, you know, the last few years has been a real wake-up call in realising how hard it is to write an album. Worth of songs.
And you're writing, Tom, about things that are so, so personal to you as well. You're not writing sort of obtuse songs. You're writing about your own life and your own emotions. I mean, that must have been extra tough.
Well, I caught the tail end of your conversation about mental health a short while ago. And I think that for me, it's been that one of the most liberating experiences I've had in my life has been over the last 2 years. You know, as you mentioned, I suffered with a very serious life-threatening addiction. And the only way that I could figure to try and get myself well from that was to open up and to be honest with another human being. And I went and had a lot of very intensive therapy. And as a result of that, you know, these problems that I've been carrying around with me for years, they suddenly just felt like they evaporated, you know, because I shared them with another human being. And it is scary, but it's liberating. And the record is the story of how I went from this sort of hellish place to finding a sense of resolution in my life.
I remember being so shocked, actually, when I heard about when you went into the Priory the first time around that it was made public. And just because I'd seen you play live loads of times in Keane, and I just remember being so shocked because the band didn't have that image. Really, whatever that means, you know, of that kind of rock and roll excess. And I know, and I also remember being really shocked when he did go into rehab with a couple of bands who were around at the time sort of shrugged their shoulders and went, lightweight. I mean, that's incredibly hard to handle.
It is. And I hope that the kind of landscape in that respect is changing. It certainly feels to me like it does, like it is. You know, the sense of this idea of kind of condemning people or stigmatizing people for having these problems, I think that is gradually changing. Because, for me, my drug addiction has come from a place of not being able to deal with my emotional world. And it's got worse and worse and worse over the years, more and more destructive. It nearly ruined all of the relationships in my life. And certainly I had no relationship to myself either. So it's just a horribly painful place to be. And I think, you know, if you've been there and if you understand it, you certainly don't think it's kind of related to being a lightweight or any such thing, really.
It seems to be we're getting these stories on a weekly basis now. We're hearing about Zayn Malik not being able to play his gig last night due to anxiety. Even Bruce Springsteen, who we're mentioning there, writing in his autobiography about how he says he was crushed by depression. And this is within the last 5 years. Is it the case, Tom, that more people are suffering from it? Or are they more people able to talk about it?
I hope that it's just that more people are able to talk about it. I mean, I do also think that there is a lot of pressure on people in modern life, you know, and I think that the kind of, you know, the Facebook generation, this idea that we have to present this perfect picture of ourselves online is taking something away from the authenticity of being a human being. You know, it's important to make mistakes. It's important to tell people if you feel sad or you feel low. I think it can be all too easy to present this image of someone who's kind of super happy and everything fits and life is perfect when you do it through social media. It's a strange time. I yeah, I hope that if anything, my record encourages people, if they do feel lonely or sad or they're living with stuff that they can't cope with, just encourages them to share it with another person.
And with rock and roll, it's encouraged, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I wonder, though. I mean, I often think that me wanting to be a lead singer, wanting to be a front man, was just really this kind of very elaborate defence, you know, to sort of say to the world, I'm OK, I'm this confident guy who can get out on stage and sing my heart out and there are no problems. And I sort of feel that that's quite a common thing. You know, you mentioned Zayn Malik and Bruce Springsteen. Well, I do wonder whether there's a pattern there.
Mm. You mentioned that you'd had a long-held dream to write a solo album. Mm. Let's talk about the album then, The Wave, out next month. It's surely a very different album from the one you first dreamed about all those years ago because of what you've been through, as we've discussed. Let's talk about Quicksand first of all. Yep. It's the single. Let's have a bit of a blast of it, actually, before we talk about
it.
You'll be knocked out, come around, shot down, shatter on the stony ground. You take it from me, it's how it'll be. Your dreams will come true, fall through, screw you, batter you to black and blue. You take it from me, it's how it'll be. Love's gonna leave. Keep rolling on. Life's gonna bring you glory, but there's another side to the story. You get up and suck it up. You keep rolling.
There you go, that's Quicksand from The Wave. It's a new album from Tom Chaplin. I mean, listening to your stories you've just told us about, Tom, you can understand that comes from an incredibly personal place. But you actually wrote that song specifically for another person.
Yeah, I wrote it for my daughter Freya, who's 2.5. So trying to give her a very honest impression of, you know, what life is going to be like, which is, you know, something that is full of glorious highs and abject lows and a bit of stuff in the middle as well. But, for me, it was a lovely song to be able to write, having got better, you know, because I knew in the first year of her life that I really couldn't promise to her that I was going to be around for,
really?
For much long. Well, you know, wow. I put myself through, my kind of drug binges were so intense, you know, and they would go on for sort of 4 or 5 days that I really emotionally, physically took myself right to the edge. So, you know, it did feel like I couldn't really be a proper father to her during that time. And one of the great things about getting well is that now I have a relationship to her, and in the song I'm saying, you know, if you ever need me, then I am right here for you. And it's just lovely to be able to make that promise to her now.
Were you there for her birth?
Yes, I was. Yeah. You know, I don't want to kind of paint the picture that I somehow, you know, a real absentee dad, but you know, yes, I was there for her birth, and she was born at home, born in the bath. It was a very kind of moving experience. And for a short while, I was, you know, the most loved up man alive. But, you know, it shows the power of addiction, because even that, having this young family and being full of excitement and love for this child, it didn't stop me from going down the path of using drugs again.
What did stop you?
Well, at the beginning of 2015, I had been on one of these binges, you know, and it was about the third or fourth day that I was still awake, and I was at a friend's house. He'd just sort of give me the keys and let me get on with it. And, I was standing next to a wall, and my heart was sort of beating all over the place, and I couldn't breathe. And I really thought I'm about to keel over and die. And it was so terrifying, you know, that I thought in that instance, if I carry on down this road, that's it, you know. And if so I said to myself, when I wake up tomorrow, I'm going to change. And it's a strange thing, because I think a lot of drug addicts say that to themselves, you know, whilst they're still in the midst of it. But actually, the next day when I woke up, I did still feel resolved to change. You know, I realized suddenly that the people in my life had started to say goodbye to me. You know, my wife had said, I love you, but I know there's nothing I can do for you anymore. And, you know, I realized that I was losing my relationship to Freya, my daughter. And, you know, it was a very sobering, literally a sobering realization. And from that point onwards, I've been doing everything I can to turn my life around. And I now am in this wonderful position. You know, life is just truly great for me.
How quickly after that day were you back in the studio making an album?
Well, it took a while. You know, I didn't really have much enthusiasm for life at that point. And I remember a guy from a local rehabilitation centre came to visit me and my wife, and we sat down around a table. And I said, I've been through all this before. I've tried it all before and it just never worked. You know, what am I doing here? And I had no real zest for life. But this guy was very practical, actually. You know, he said, you just need to go and sit in your studio for 5 minutes and just see what that feels like. And then gradually over the course of the next few months, you know, I did a lot of very deep psychoanalytical therapy, which is, you know, quite scary, but very helpful. But yes, also just practical things, you know, getting out there. And even if it's just for 5 minutes, sitting in my studio, suddenly thinking, oh, yeah, I remember what this is all about. This is great. You know, reconnecting with all that stuff. And within a few months, I was back kind of enjoying life to the full and repairing the relationships that were so broken in my life.
And you've been working with a man who many people will know as Aqualung, Matt Hales.
Yep.
And I mean, I just reading up before we did this interview, Tom, it made me go and listen to Strange and Beautiful again, which I hadn't done for many years.
Great
remember
song.
What a brilliant song that is. So, I mean, how did that relationship form?
Well, one of the things I was always very resistant to was working with other people. You know, I thought, I'm going to make a solo record. I've got to do it all on my own. And that I found creatively very stifling after a while. So I started to work with other people, and Matt was one of the people I wrote some songs with for the record. In Quicksand, in fact, was one of those songs. And, you know, we were kind of kindred spirits, really. It was very sort of similar sense of humour. And, you know, I just loved the work that he did on the demos that we made. And it just seemed like, why go looking for another producer when we've got this guy we already really like? So, yeah, I went and camped out in Matt's studio in Pasadena in California, and the rest is history.
So did life start to feel good?
Well, my life is, as you know, I feel like I've been given this amazing second chance. And I really do feel like I'm very lucky to be alive. I have no qualms about that. So every day I wake up, you know, and I don't feel hungover. I don't feel kind of depressed, chemically depressed as a result of drug use. So, and I have so many things to live for now. You know, I have this wonderful family and this album that I'm truly proud of, and all of these kind of exciting things happening along the way, you know. So my life is really a beautiful thing now, and I just can't believe I'm saying that 18 months after this kind of massive meltdown. But hey, here I am.
Adam's got in touch to say one of the greatest Glastonbury experiences was Keane in the Avalon tent a few years ago. Do you remember that one?
I was there.
You were there. Yeah. It was, in fact, it coincided with the England Germany game in the, would it have been the Euros or the World Cup? I can't remember. Maybe the World Cup. When we lost 4-1, I think.
That was the World Cup 2010.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, so I remember, because obviously at Glastonbury they have the big screens, and we were very worried, even though we were playing a kind of little acoustic-y sort of set in a small tent, we were very worried because it coincided with the football, our little performance. But I think once England were obviously losing, the field just completely filled up and the tent was bursting at the seams. And it was, yeah, very emotional, lovely Glastonbury experience.
Deborah's saying, managed to get tickets this morning for your first solo gig in Brighton. Whoopie, whoop, whoop. You got the three whoops there.
Wow.
How different is it going to feel taking to the stage without Keane surrounding you?
It will, I think, probably feel quite alien and strange to start with. But, You know, the album is one of the things about making a solo record is that you can basically throw whatever you like at it when you're recording it. But of course, it gives you a complete headache when it comes to realizing that for live purposes. So there are so many elements and textures on the record that I've had to find these musicians who are basically brilliant at everything, so they can kind of turn their hand to different things in different songs. So I spent most of the summer sort of figuring that out, and I found these wonderful players, and I'm really excited about taking the stage with them. Yes, it will feel strange not to, you know, look to my left and see Tim Rice-Oxley on the piano, but nevertheless, it's a new experience and a new challenge, and that's kind of the reason I put Keane to one side for a bit.
It's always a difficult one for people who go solo from groups. How many Keane songs will you play in the set?
Depends how well the set's going. Might need to chuck, you know, Somewhere Only We Know in there if it's going badly.
No, I want to talk about a couple of, because you introduced a brass band onto one of the tracks in this, and there's a really poignant reason behind that, actually.
Yeah, well, thanks for picking up on that. It's a really lovely story. There's a song which is actually the closing song on the record and the title track,
yeah,
The Wave. And it's a song, you know, about this new sort of approach that I have to life, about trying to go gracefully, you know, through your existence. And I, you know, because I was always so in opposition to life, and now I just take it as it comes, which I think is a good way to be. Certainly, I'm finding it to be that way. But once we'd finished the song, once we'd got the song sort of up and sort of, you know, we had a piano and we had the voice, but we're thinking we need something else. And both Matt and I looked at each other and we said, well, it's got to be a Colliery brass band. Now, that's a hard thing to find in Los Angeles. So it got us thinking, though. And I went to the funeral of a friend of my wife's about 10 years ago. He'd been a soldier in Iraq and very tragically been killed out there. And the regimental brass band of the Rifles battalion, I think they're called, or regiment, they had played at the funeral. And it was just hauntingly beautiful. And I just suddenly said to Matt, you know, why don't I see if I can get hold of this regimental band and try and kind of make that connection? Let me tell you, trying to jump through hoops with the Ministry of Defence is a nightmare. It was so hard to pin them down. They had like four or five different, you'd think they'd be organised, but there were like four or five different people, all who seemed like they were in charge, but we couldn't figure out which one was. Eventually, we managed to pin them down, and they came to studio in London. And you know, all they asked for was, we want hot food when we arrive, and so they arrived in their kind of camo gear, and we gave them pizzas and then let them get on with it. And,
wow.
And I was in the studio with these, you know, with this full military brass band. And they just, as soon as they started up playing my song, I just, you know, I was moved to tears. It was the most glorious, beautiful, soulful experience.
Can't take them on tour with you, unfortunately.
No, I don't think so.
But you've also you're channeling a bit of Jethro Tull. There's a bit of flute in there.
Well, yeah, this is true. Yeah, I mean, I kind of regretted as a kid. Well, once I'd become a teenager and wanted to make rock music, I kind of regretted the fact that I had grown up learning to play the flute, because it's not a very rock and roll instrument unless you're Jethro Tull. But, you know,
I'm trying to think of any other great rock flautists.
There aren't. I mean,
how
do you rock a flute? It's very difficult, I think. So
I'm thinking of Anchorman now.
Yeah, well, there we go. Jazz flute. That's the answer. So I actually sold my flute. It was a very expensive flute that my granny had bought for me, because obviously I was quite good, and I sold it to buy a Marshall amp. But, you know, I think one of the spirit of this making this solo record was, let's try everything. And Matt was very, you know, he was very insistent that I at least metaphorically dust off my flute and try it out. So, yeah, on the song Hardened Heart, there's a bit of my terrible flute playing tucked in there.
Wait a minute, are you going to bust out the flute live then?
No.
You sure?
Not unless I've got an orchestra with me. Well, you can't sing and play the flute at the same time. Unless you're going to a solo,
I think the audience should all be there going, flute, flute, flute.
Oh, God, you've set something off here.
Adam's agreeing. One of, sorry, there's been... Matt in Epsom says, yes, indeed, the Keane Glastonbury Acoustic Tent performance stays with me to this very day. A beautiful set that is one of my all-time live music highlights. Wow. And Lucas tuning in from Buenos Aires, especially to listen to you as well. And he says, I wish you the best with your new album.
That's nice. Yeah, a lot of fans in Latin America. Keane were a very big deal there. So,
what's your theory?
I don't know. I've no idea. Yeah, good question. I mean, they're very, very passionate about music, and particularly kind of British indie music out there. And I just think we made the effort to go and play out there. And it's not an easy place to get to and to tour. So I think they fell in love with us for numerous reasons, but probably just because we were kind of, we could be bothered to get out there for a start.
Peter Gabriel apparently played the flute very, very well, says Electric Pond on Twitter to let you know.
Okay, yeah.
But I mean, you've mentioned Keane. Is Keane's not over, are you? What's
well, no.
The story?
I said to the guys, I need the time and space to make a solo record. And, you know, because inevitably, when you're in a band like Keane, you're always going to get offers. Tim's always cooking up new songs. He's probably got a whole record written anyway that's waiting in the sidelines. And so it's very hard not to kind of give in and say, yes, I'll do this, and oh, well, maybe I'll do that. So I had to say to them, look, I need this time and this space to make the record that I need to make. And so that's what I'm doing. And I'm unsure of what the future holds, but Keane is part of the fabric of our lives. So I find it hard to believe that there won't be something further down the line.
And have you been brave and sent each of them a copy of the new album?
2 out of 3 have got a copy. I'm yet to send one to Tim, actually,
really?
Believe it or not.
Now, why?
Oh, that's a tricky... Well, you know, I'm floundering right now.
Is his the opinion you care about most?
It probably is, yeah. Yes. And Tim and I have a very enigmatic sort of relationship. You know, we love each other dearly, but I think we also really envy each other too. You know, I envy his songwriting, and I think maybe he envies me as a front man and performer. So,
flautist.
Yeah, there's and flautist. Yeah. So we have a curious relationship. And, you know, we, like most British men, we don't communicate very well. So that's probably part of the reason.
Stick it in the post.
Yeah, God, I must.
It's been great to speak to you, Tom. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. It was a pleasure.
Oh, enjoy the tour. And Tom's album, The Wave, is out next month.
14th of October. Yeah. Tickets for his first solo tour have gone on sale. You may hear Kieran's songs. You probably won't hear him play the flute. Time for Drive.